Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The end of 2014 is just a few weeks away, and on today's Your Call, we are having our end-of-year book show. What were your favorite books this year? What are you reading now? And if you need any recommendations for the holidays, or just recommendations because you might have some extra time to do some reading over the holidays, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your recommendations to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And every time we do a book show, we take all of your recommendations and we put them on our website, yourcallradio.org, right after the show. Joining us to talk about books today is Sharon Levin, founder of the Bay Area Children's Literature List. Sharon has been reviewing children's literature for almost 20 years. She blogs at lifeliteraturelaughter.com and is a children's specialist at Books, Inc. in Palo Alto. And Sharon joins us here in studio. Hi, Sharon. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Nice to have you. And I love your T-shirt, Public Radio Nerd.
It's true.
That's great. Nice to see you. And we're also joined today by Kevin Hunsinger. He's co-owner of Green Apple Books and Music in San Francisco, founded back in 1967. A new Green Apple just opened on the bottom floor of Lavideo in the Inner Sunset in San Francisco, and it's called Green Apple Books on the Park. It's a beautiful new bookstore. And Kevin's also in studio.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you. Hi, Rose. Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Great to be here.
So I love whenever we do these shows because the table's full of books. So why don't we start off with kids' books?
Okay.
Sharon, what were some of your favorites? What did you bring in?
I brought a lot. I'm going to start with some. I know we also said we were doing independent bookstores, so I have
yes.
to say I brought a book by local author Jandy Nelson called I'll Give You the Sun. I love this book. I cannot figure out how to book talk it. So I will tell you, I stole the blurb from Copperfields. So let me read what Copperfields wrote about I'll Give You the Sun. Judy and her brother Noah are incredibly close twins. Life before the event that divides them is Noah's story to tell. Life after it is Jude's. What the twins don't realize is that each only have half the story. And if they can just find their way back to one another, they'd have a chance to remake their world. And it is. It's a stunning, beautiful book, and I just can never figure out how to book talk it except to hand it to people and say, it's good, trust me.
Great. And is that one, that's not a kid's children's
this
book.
This is YA. This is young adult.
Okay.
So children's
okay.
literature is everything mm-hmm. from birth to young adult through high school. That's the whole thing. And young adult is not, as people think of it, a genre. It's an age classification, which in that within that age classification we have horror and mystery and romance and dystopia, but it's age pretty much 12 or 13 on up.
They're really blurring the lines these days. I mean, the young adult fiction is so sophisticated. Mm. And like you say, the books look and feel and act, you know, like adult trade, you know, books. So it's a great time, for young adult readers of all ages.
Yes.
And why are you such a big fan of I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nelson?
Well, first of all, the writing is fantastic. It's one of those books you actually slow down to read. And she has such fully formed characters. Jude and Noah both, just, they're such teenagers. They only see their part of the picture, which is what a teenager is. They're a little self-centered. But they're incredibly close artistic twins. That's artistic. And they both approach the world in different ways. And when they divide, it breaks their hearts because they have been so close. And it breaks your heart to see them not understanding each other. Mm. It's gorgeous.
Uh-huh. One more?
Oh, one more. Okay, so I'm going to bring out one that I call Breaking the Fourth Wall books. And that's a theater term where you acknowledge the reader. This is Patrick McDonald. You're giggling. A perfectly messed up story has a cover that should be a perfect story. But the reader has improved the book in some ways and also done things like dropping peanut butter and jelly onto the pages of the book, and the little character Louis in the book reacts to this. He is not only not happy about this, he's really upset that it's chunky peanut butter, really, on the pages of his book. It is absolutely adorable
and
hilarious.
Cute.
It is.
And what about you, Kevin? What did you bring in? What were your top two?
Sure. We'll dive in with a couple novels real fast, and a very recent release by Haruki Murakami, which I love. Everybody loves, who reads him, The Strange Library. This is a novella. It's a shorter piece for some people who maybe are used to his, like, 1Q84, these 800-page tomes. This is very slender. It's maybe 50 pages, and it's a very tight and bright story of a young boy who comes into a library, requests some very obscure tomes on economic theory, and when the old man goes and gets them, he's like, oh, okay, now I have to, you know, he says, now you have to read them. Oh, well, but you can't leave. You can't take these with you. These have to be, you know, remain here. So they take him to the reading room, which is basically a cell in this library, and lock him up. So it's it's almost like a great joy for a reader to be forced into, you know, oh, I got nothing else to do but read this book. but this book, the actual physical object of The Strange Library, is a collaboration with Haruki Murakami and Chip Kidd, the dust jacket designer from Random House. He's a beautiful artist, very, very striking style, and the illustrations combine wonderfully with the story. It's the first time that Haruki's collaborated with an artist like this, and the format is really cute. Just kind of folds out, and it's got some, you know, different sort of formatting. So it's a good physical gift, and it would fit in any stocking. So quite enjoyable.
Great story.
Pretty fun. Speaking of great story, though, Station 11, a novel by Emily St. John Mandel. It's a post-apocalyptic tale. And there's a lot of those out there. This is pretty special, though. It's the only one that I've read that really instills a sense of hope. You know, after 99.99% of the human race has been eradicated by a virus, this follows a theater group and performing musicians and Shakespearean actors some 20 years after the virus hit. And on their journey through the various stations of places where people are still living, like an airport, they through scraps of paper and stories that are getting back to the pre-virus history of an actor, Arthur, an aged actor who finally is able to play King Lear. The book opens with him dying on stage, and then it follows the people in that theater through the coming apocalypse and then beyond as the story unfolds back and forth. But it really does leave you feeling optimistic and hopeful for a human race. And so a very, very, very illuminating look at what could come. And that was shortlisted for the National Book Award. So, you know, it's got the good stuff.
Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yes.
Okay. And that's Kevin Hunsinger, co-owner of Green Apple Books. And Sharon Levin is founder of the Bay Area Children's Literature List. She is a children's specialist at Books, Inc. Palo Alto. So if you need any kids' books recommendations, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. We've got a lot of callers on the line already, so let's go to Nancy in Berkeley. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the show. Let's go to, sorry, I think we dropped you, Molly in Carmel. Hello, Molly? Okay, let's try Judy in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm going to turn off the radio. well, this year I wanted to mention two things to you. One is last year I think I told you guys about The Anthologist by Nicholson Baker, which is just delightful. And it's about, it has to do with poetry, meter. And so this is, when I heard that there was another book with the same character, Paul Chowder, of all the most adorable names, I had to get it, and it's called Traveling Sprinkler, and I haven't started it yet, but I'm really looking forward. I wanted to let people know that there's a follow-up to The Anthologist. And the other book is very famous, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which is a kid's book by Judy Blume. And the reason I'm reading it is I've heard, you know, I didn't grow up with that book. I was too old. So I'd heard of it over the years, and I never read it. And then I think it was mentioned on either your program or Fresh Air. They were interviewing a woman who was studying early puberty that's happening nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
And she referred to that book. So I'm reading it. You know, I work at the library, and I just grabbed it off the shelf, and I'm reading it in my breaks. And, you know, these kids' books are really good adult reading. They're just so insightful. So that's it.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. That actually was a book that was featured on Fresh Air. I believe it's called The New Puberty?
That sounds familiar.
How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls by We can get the title, or Juliana Deardorff, I think it is. But we're going to, we just pitched a show about this.
Yeah, they're local authors.
Okay, and so we're definitely going to do a show about that. So thank you so much for calling in. Let's go next to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Hello, Nancy. Let's try Molly in Carmel. Hi, Molly.
Hi, thank you so much.
Sure, welcome to the show.
Are you there?
Yes, go ahead. Hi, Molly, we're here. Go ahead. Okay, I think we're having some phone issues. Let's go to...
Sorry. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yes, the storied life...
Of A.J. Fikre.
The storied life of A.J. Fikre by Gabrielle Zevin is a wonderful book about a bookstore owner. And also the series by Louise Penny... is a wonderful detective series. Those are my two recommendations.
I haven't read the Louise Penny, but she's just flying off the shelves these days. I think she's really starting to hit a stride and have breakout appeal, so I'm looking very forward to getting to her, too.
What is that one about? Are you still there? No. Do you know what it's about, Kevin?
No, as I say, I haven't read her yet, but I've just seen them flying. They're moving too fast for me to get them.
Yeah.
She's become very popular lately, so I'm very interested as well.
What do you think? I mean, we've done so many shows about books and independent bookstores, mm-hmm. and luckily they're thriving again mm-hmm. after we saw a lot of bookstores shut down.
Right.
What do you think makes a book fly off shelves? I mean, shelves. Obviously, radio interviews, mm-hmm. good reviews, mm-hmm. but word of mouth, book clubs.
Word of mouth. Just in the story, yeah, when I'm talking about a book that I love with some customer on the sales floor, inevitably somebody else will hear and join the conversation. Oh, what's that? You know?
Right.
And then it just, it spreads. They're tipping points. It's a very interesting phenomenon how something can really hit. And then the others are just, oh, I love this book. I bang the drum so hard, and it just never happens. For that author, or for certain things. So I wish I had the crystal ball to know how certain things do get traction. But it's always enjoyable to see when something that I've followed for some years and maybe nobody else has really enjoyed, and then to see something like that become a success. It's one of the most gratifying elements of bookselling for me.
Yeah, I mean, just the hand selling. When we're in the store, I think the reason independents are doing well, at least in the Bay Area, is the people who work in independent bookstores love books, love reading, and we're little book evangelists. So it's like, you like this one, you should try that. And like Kevin said, then the customers help us hand sell because they start getting enthusiastic. Mm. And sometimes it takes a while to catch on.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about kids' books? How do kids' books catch on?
Teachers talking about it in school, librarians, reviews, book clubs. The kids talk to each other about books. It's great. Kids still like real books, and they talk to their friends about it.
That's nice to hear.
It is nice. It is nice. They do like the real books.
Do you find also, because I see that there's a trend of sort of these interactive books mm-hmm. where you can play with them and flip them over. Do you see the same things happening with children's books? And how has that changed over the 20 years you've been working with kids' books?
You want more thought than I'm capable of giving. we've always had interactive books. There's always been Lift the Flap and Moving Parts. And the ones we're talking about with the breaking of the fourth wall, I'm sure somebody out there will come up with something that came out 20 years ago. The last one I remember was Chloe and the Lion by Mac Barnett, who's local. Before that, Once Upon a Cool Motorcycle Dude. But I'm sure there's been... interactive before that I can't think of.
I also think a very important part of that in the development of the interactive books now, and it kind of has had a really interesting growth cycle lately, is a response to electronic reading. Mm. It's the book as an object a little bit more, and I think publishers are going to have to do a little bit more of that, make it a special experience that you just can't replicate on an e-reader on a tablet, which is a great way to read if that's the way you want to read. I love the opportunities and the options that readers have now, but I do think that's a very important aspect of it, the book as object. Some things just don't replicate.
Right.
Like the Ertoyer books from mm-hmm. Chronicle, which is a local publisher. They have Press Here, Mix It Up, mm-hmm. and there's another one. And they are, it's like if you close the book and then you open it, it looks like the colors have mixed.
Oh, wow.
It's really, really clever.
Huh. What about graphic novels?
I love graphic
novels. Yeah, sensational. Yeah, they're
any
great.
New good graphic novels out recently?
El Defo?
I haven't read that one.
Want me to run with that one?
Sure, if you want to. And then I've definitely got a follow-up to that.
Okay, El Defo is Cece Bell, and Cece became deaf when she was a child from, I believe, meningitis. This is a graphic novel that she's done about how at first she had to wear a little amplifier. Well, she had to wear an amplifier with headphones, and her teacher would have the microphone. And she felt very, very self-conscious about it, of course, because she's an elementary school child. And then she realized it was her superpower. She could hear the teacher. The teachers don't know to turn off the microphones like people perhaps in broadcasting do. She'd hear the teacher into the teacher's lounge talking about the kids. She'd hear the teacher peeing, which children always love, and as do I. And then if the teacher was out of the room, the kids could act up, and she could tell them when the teacher was coming back.
Wow.
So it became her superpower. It's outstanding.
That is great. What is it called again?
El Defo, because that's what she called herself.
Okay.
E-L,
right.
Space D-E-A-F as in Frank, O, by C.C. Bell, B-E-L-L.
And how old is the girl?
She's in elementary school.
Oh, that's great. It's
fantastic.
Yeah. And you have a graphic novel to suggest?
Well, the early days of comics, underground comics, Zap Comics for specific, just came out, the Fantagraphics came out with the complete Zap Comics, which ran about 30 years, and that's a $500 boxed set. It's extraordinary. It's beautiful. It's already out of print as soon as, you know, it was released. We have copies at Green Apple, but that might not be for everybody. What can be for everybody is a book that I brought down, the Comics Journal Library Zap Interviews. So this collects interviews with the Zap artists, who were a group of, and it was really interesting, a closed group of seven individuals. R. Crumb is probably the one that most people have heard of, S. Clay Wilson, etc., in San Francisco in the 60s, using comic books to really, really shake things up, as it were. Very offensive, very groundbreaking. The art was fantastic, but again, very shocking, very adults only. Mm. And the interviews that have been collected with these seven people over this 30-year period of time give real extraordinary insight into the cultural change, you know, that they basically created, and then how they've managed to keep doing that over the many, many years. And it's still coming out. The artists are very, very, very creative, and
wow.
Yeah, and the Zap interviews are sensational. It's very dense. It's really for the fan, but a fan of Zap comics and underground culture historically, I think it's a very important book.
And Kevin brought this one in. This looks like a great book.
And I do want to put a plug in. I think Kevin will back me up. Graphic novels and comic books are real books.
Mm-hmm.
They're real reading. Parents, teachers, and librarians, please stop turning your nose up at these books. You are discouraging your children.
Yeah.
These are real books.
But yeah, and fiction and nonfiction.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think of the Chris Ware's Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid on Earth. I really think it's like the great American graphic novel. It has the depth and breadth of any wonderful novel.
I love Studs Terkel's Working was turned into a graphic novel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's an amazing
Howl
book.
Was turned into a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Howard Zinn's People's History was turned into a graphic, and that's incredible. Mm-hmm.
Gareth Hines did The Odyssey, which I have handed to every high school freshman I know because they read it side by side with the Odyssey they have to read in school.
Oh, great.
It makes it so much more accessible.
Sure. Yeah, Spain Rodriguez, one of the underground comic artists featured in Zap interviews, did the Che Guevara story, so his life history. So, yeah, very much so.
Richard Feynman.
Yeah.
Oh. Also in a biography of Richard Feynman's graphic novel,
today, very real deal.
Yes, today we are talking about books. It's our year, end of the year book show, and we're talking about books with Sharon Levin, founder of the Bay Area Children's Literature List. She's been reviewing children's lit for almost 20 years. She's a children's specialist at Books, Inc. in Palo Alto. Kevin Hunsinger is co-owner of Green Apple Books in San Francisco. A new Green Apple just opened on the bottom floor of Lavideo, in the Inner Sunset, San Francisco. It's called Green Apple Books on the Park. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any recommendations, what books did you read this year that really stayed with you? What are you reading now? If you need any recommendations, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I have three recommendations. The last three books I read, which I thought were really, really good. The first one is Ian McEwan's new book called The Children Act, which I just thought was his best book since Atonement. It's fairly short, and it's really, really a good book. He's one of the most elegant writers around, and this one is it's different. It's about a judge in London who gets a case. She deals with children, child abuse, divorce, etc. And this is about a 17-year-old boy with leukemia, who's a Jehovah Witness, and that's all I'll say about that. And the next book is a new book by Robert Harris, which is called An Officer and a Spy, and it's kind of a part fictionalized, part nonfiction, although it's considered a novel, of the Dreyfus case, and it's a real page-turner. And the last one is Alice Hoffman's new book. I've read all of her books, and this one is just wonderful. It's called The A Museum of Extraordinary Things, and it takes place in New York, early 1900s. It concerns kind of a freak show at Coney Island and the Triangle Shirt Factory fire. And I just had, I have a six-year-old grandson, and he and his friends love the Mercy the Pig books by Kate DeMillo.
It's Mercy Watson, and the author is Kate DeCamillo, right?
Yes, yes. There's a whole group of them, and they are hysterical. I love them.
Well, great recommendations. Thank you for calling in, Nancy. Let's go next to Laura in Carmel. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show.
I found a book from a book trailer that someone shared with me on Facebook. And the trailer was so well done, I thought it was a movie trailer. I thought, oh, my gosh, this book's already been made into a movie. But it wasn't. It was the book trailer.
Laura, I think we missed the name of it. Can you repeat that?
Yes. Time Tunnel, The Towers. It's the first in a series of a retelling of this. The first one is a retelling of 9/11, but it uses real characters blended with fictional characters, real science blended with fictional science, and I loved it. I could not put it down, but I will also say that trailer was so good, I want it to be a movie.
Great.
Richard Todd is the author, and I had never heard of him before, but he's a great author. I know he writes for Huffington Post, and I think he's written a business book, and this is his first novel.
Well, you just raised everybody's eyebrows in the room here. We're like, oh, got to check that
one
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. We have an email from Lisa who says, hi, Sharon. Hi, Kevin. Way too many fabulous things, especially for children to list this year, but I had to talk about these visual marvels. Art book, Pen and Ink by Isaac Fitzgerald and Wendy McNaughton. Incredibly illustrated and related behind tattoos. Mm-hmm. Young adult graphic novel, Through the Woods by Emily Carroll. Deliciously creepy and sophisticated. Middle grade graphic novel, Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales,
yes.
Treaties, Trenches, Mud, and Blood, a World War I history for the tween set. You like that one, Sharon?
I love the Nathan Hale. I don't know the Woods one, so I will go home and read it right away.
Okay. picture book, Viva Frida by Yuji.
Juji Morales. Juji used to be
Frida
local.
Gorgeous Frida Kahlo.
Yes, it's beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
And so it's a picture book of
it's
Frida
a picture
Kahlo.
Book. Anything by Juji Morales is outstanding. And this one I just love because I become a smarter person by reading children's books because they give me much more information than I'll ever read in an adult book.
So it's a picture book about Frida Kahlo.
Yes.
Huh. And tells her story?
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. And then neither one nor the other, Shackleton's Journey by William Grill, a visual narrative of Antarctic exploration.
I don't know that one, but Jennifer Armstrong has one about the his journey, too, and it was outstanding.
No, I got
Shipwreck at the Bottom of the World.
In the Kingdom of Ice. Sorry to cut you off. That's my favorite nonfiction book of the year, Hampton Sides. And that makes Shackleton's voyage look like a walk in the park on a nice afternoon.
Wow.
It does. It's an amazing story. The last time the U.S. backed an expedition to find the Northwest Passage, the North Pole. It also involves kind of, although wingnut theories, the hollow earth theories, early days of Edison. They brought Edison lights with them to the Arctic Circle to try to illuminate the North Pole. It does have San Francisco angles. The ship, the Jeannette, was housed and restored in San Francisco and launched from San Francisco. It's a really, really wonderful book. And again, just take that, Shackleton.
Well, thank you so much for those recommendations. We're going to take a quick break today. It is our year-end book show. We'd love to hear from you. What are you reading? What was your favorite book this year? And if you need any recommendations, we'd love to hear from you. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Lots of ways to join in today's conversation. On the telephone, it's toll-free, 866-798-8255. 866-798-TALK. Or you can send your question via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And at noon today, Backstory, here on KALW San Francisco Local Public Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Harry Shearer, actor and host of the radio program Le Show. Harry Shearer and his wife, Judith Owen, are in the Bay Area for their variety show, Christmas Without Tears. It's tomorrow night, and it's a benefit for the San Francisco Mental Health Association, really important organization. You can find more information about the performance at yourcallradio.org, and the information's at the very top. And then coming up on Wednesday, Gail Sheehy will be in studio. Gail is out with a memoir about her life. Really interesting information about what it was like to be a woman journalist in the 70s. And she did some really important investigative work. So we hope you tune in for that on Wednesday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Gail's new book is called Daring, A Memoir, My Passages. And today it is our year-end book show. And if you have any recommendations, if you'd like to talk about what really stood out for you this year, what are you reading right now? If you need any recommendations, give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post your recommendation on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by Sharon Levin, founder of the Bay Area Children's Literature List and children's specialist at Books, Inc., Palo Alto. Kevin Hunsinger is co-owner of Green Apple Books in San Francisco. The new Green Apple is Green Apple Books on the Park in the Inner Sunset. And let's go next to Robert in El Cerrito. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I'm enjoying this show and great to listen to all these books. So I was just really taken by a book called Nest.
Yes. Sorry. Sorry. That's okay. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes, you guys know it. When I was done reading it, I was laying in bed and just wouldn't let go of the book. I didn't want anybody to take it from me.
what is it about?
It's the protagonist is an 11-year-old girl in Cape Cod, and essentially she, I don't want to give anything away for those who haven't read it, but she lives with her sister and her dad, who's a psychiatrist, and her dancer mom. And the mom gets symptoms of an illness. And the way that the book deals with it is absolutely wonderful. It takes you into what it's really like to be a sensitive, intelligent kid. And it was just incredibly moving, very funny, and just a fabulous read, wonderful writing. So I'd say it's one of the strongest kids' books I've read in just ages and ages and ages.
Oh, wow.
Definitely for kids through teens. My teens actually loved it, and through adults.
Oh, absolutely. And you described it the way I described it, which is what I call a hug book, when you finish it and you just hug it to your chest because you don't want to let it go. I do want to note that the author, Louise Ehrlich, is local.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Did you have another recommendation? Nope. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Robert. Let's go next to Paul in San Francisco. Hi, Paul.
Listen, turning to a different note, local history in San Francisco is a perennial interest to a lot of people, and there's a book called Victorian Glory in San Francisco in the Bay Area that came out this past spring, published by Schiffer, and it's by a local author, Paul Duscherer. And it sort of demystifies the whole array of 19th century Victorian era styles of architecture with examples grouped according to style. And it's good for tourists and general interest, but it's also a valuable tool for you know, neighborhoods and people wanting to preserve things. So it's just a different kind of book, but hopefully it's also a hug book.
Not to be confused, one of my favorite lines, I think it was Dorothy Parker who said, I don't remember of what, but this is not a book to be set aside lightly, but rather it should be thrown across a room with great force.
It's a good gift idea for San Francisco fans and residents alike. So
sounds great.
That's nice. my take.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for calling. Let's hear next from Diamudra in San Francisco. Hi, Diamudra. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. I've been looking for a book for my 8-year-old niece, and she loves Malala, and I realized that they have a special I Am Malala edition for youth.
They do.
So I'll wrap that up and put it under the Christmas tree, and I think she's going to really like it.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Do you know much about that one, Sharon?
I haven't. I read the full-size traditional book, but I've seen that one. I've heard it. They made it so kids can understand what she did without seeing the horror of what happened to her.
Do you have any other recommendations for that age range?
8-year-old. We want adventures. We want heroes like that. I would look for... eight. Sorry, I'm thinking Claudette Colvin. But that is definitely for an older audience. She was the one who didn't get off her seat on the bus long before Rosa Parks did it, but nobody supported her. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And that's for children
children.
10, 12?
She gets pregnant, so 12 and up, 11
okay.
and up.
Right.
By Philip Host.
Well, here's kind of a related question. Hana writes in, my 11-year-old really wants to read this book, The Fault in Our Stars, because her friends are reading it. I took a look at the film clips and saw this intense sex scene, so no, my kid is not going to read this book yet. I feel like children's books should have ratings like films or video games to indicate sex, violence, drugs, etc. Is this talked about in the book world?
We have things in sections. So when I have people looking at young adult books and they have an 8-year-old, because what people think is, oh, my child is so bright, they're reading at this level. And reading level, which I hate anyway, and content and context are two completely different things. Mm-hmm. People have been handing the Hunger Games to 8-year-olds.
Really?
Yeah, no. So,
because they just don't know.
Actually, even if you tell them, often don't care because all the kids are reading it. Teachers have read it to their fourth grade classes, you know. So I agree with this mother. Fault in Our Stars is not for 11. And the thing is when you hit these books at the age where it speaks to you, it will really speak to you. Now, I will say I have friends in the book world who say you never take a book away from a kid, they will self-censor. I say if they don't self-censor before the rape scene, it may be too late. So you have very different views on this, even within the children's lit community. But I will say bookstores divide by age.
Kevin, anything to add there? What advice would you give to
wow.
parents? Because that's an interesting point about the Hunger Games. I mean, this is a very adult, violent.
I
love the movies.
Yeah. I love the books.
And I'd love to read the books. But are the books similar to the movies?
The movie actually was less bloody and violent.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so The Hunger Games is a really violent book then.
To win, you have to kill off 24 people, right? Or 23
right.
people. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, what do you do? I'm not a fan of any sort of a sticker to guide your parenting by. I think that you do need to be involved in the lives of your family and your community and know what they're reading and talk about it. I think discussion is probably the greatest aspect. But it's challenging. I mean, they're chock full of sex, drugs, violence, chock full of sex, drugs, and violence. And, you know, some of it's even, you know, a little bit shocking to me as a very seasoned reader.
And
you
it's
know?
Not a bad
Francesca
thing,
LeBlanc, I think.
Oh, my God, Francesca,
I mean,
yes.
I couldn't believe my chin at the floor, but this was like, you know, 10 years ago I was looking at this. And so it's gotten more, as I say, sophisticated since then. You know, what do you do?
What do you mean? What, Francesca LeBlanc, can
she's
you
she's an author
on
that? Yeah, just a lot of sex and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in
a lot of very young adult books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, very language, you know, everything that you would, you know, read in an R rated adult book, yeah, is
so,
for a 10-year-old. Yeah.
So let's say, for example, 8-year-old, 10-year-old comes home and says, Mom, I want this book. What's the best way for a parent to look into the content of a book?
Read it first.
Yeah, or skim through it. Yeah, you know, we have so many opportunities now with online groups like Goodreads or things. You know, there are many different. So I'm sure a quick search, you know, would give a lot of different reading guides or reviews from other readers.
Sure.
But yeah, I think just a blanket. This is not, you know, this is 8 and up or something.
Right.
Like,
no.
It's. I don't think something like that works. They try to do that with the music industry. You know,
That's
the
true.
PMRC, and that just it was basically a. You know, they put the parental warning stickers on the albums with language. I mean, that's just that's a marketing tool more than anything else. I mean, those are the only ones that sold, you know. So.
All right. Well, wow. Interesting question. Thanks for writing in, Hana. Today is our year-end book show, and we're joined by Sharon Levin. She is a children's specialist at Books, Inc. Palo Alto, founder of the Bay Area Children's Lit List. She's been reviewing children's lit for 20 years. Kevin Hunsinger is co-owner of Green Apple in San Francisco. Green Apple Books on the Park recently opened on the bottom floor of Lividio in the Inner Sunset. It's a gorgeous bookstore. Be sure to check
it
out.
May I add something to what Kevin was saying about YA books?
Please.
I know that there's probably adults out there and parents saying, oh, well, this is terrible that YA has that. And I know that's not what Kevin is saying. There is nothing wrong with sex, drugs, and rock and roll in books for teenagers. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. And it amazes me the people who want to protect children from reading about things that may be mild compared to the lives they're leading.
Yeah, wow, yes, exactly. Kids are growing up quick these days.
Well, we have an email from Ruby who says, I'd like to give a shout out to short stories. I became a big fan of Tony Doerr's Memory Wall a few years ago. His book took a reader to far reaches of the world, different societies, different cultures. His writing is superb. Alice Munro, of course, she's well-known and highly acclaimed. When it's all said and done, she's a shattering writer. Her hateship, friendship, courtship, loveship, marriage set me back on my heels and my brain spinning. How do they do it? The imagination, the execution, the use of evocative words. I'm so impressed with a good writer's skill.
I was thinking the same thing about that email. Very, very well done.
Yeah
that's a lot of hard work, I bet. That's how they do it.
Do you have many conversations with the authors that you all love?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what
it's
do they say
small
about
world.
About just the skill and the art of writing? How do they make a book great?
Well, none of them start with a message. They all start with a story. And they tell the story they wanted to hear as a child, maybe not in a pedantic way, but the adventure they wanted to have.
I forget if it was Hemingway or Fitzgerald that said the secret to genius is Hemingway. It's just keeping the seat of the pants affixed to the seat of the chair. You know, and although he wrote Standing Up. But, it's true. I think there's just a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication. And like any art or craft, you know, the more you do it, hopefully the better you get. But then you've got to have a true voice.
That's true.
And that's, you can't, you know, if you can technically do all the writing, that's fine. But if you don't have a voice or a story to tell, you're right, some people are blessed.
Well, thank you for writing in, Ruby. We had a caller who wanted to say that the author of Next is Esther Ehrlich.
Oh, gosh, I mixed her up with Louise
Erdick.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry,
okay.
Esther.
So author of Next is Esther Ehrlich. Thank you for that. Nest. Thank you.
This is a vortex.
All right, let's hear next from Jerry in Capitola. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to mention a book that's probably appropriate for teenagers and above. The name of the novel is called Cesar's Wars, The Rise of America's Special Forces, and the author is a local Santa Cruz guy named Jerry Schoenick. And the book is about a young Nicaraguan American in San Francisco from 1948 to 1990 who becomes a ranger and a special forces person and eventually a CIA agent. And it's interesting in a way because it doesn't just trace his life. It also talks about the life of his family and the history of the family going back into Nicaragua. And he has some very, very interesting things that he does. He gets involved with Bay of Pigs. He gets involved with all kinds of historical issues. So I think it's an interesting book that might be worthwhile for some new readers, particularly for people who are interested in San Francisco and Santa Cruz area.
That's great, cool. Jerry. And you have a beautiful bookstore in your area in Capitola.
We had a Santa Cruz Capitola Book Cafe, but it's no longer there.
Oh, it shut down.
Bookshop Santa Cruz is still good. And Logos is fine as always.
I didn't realize that. Sorry to hear that.
Logos and Bookshop, yes. Great stores.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in, Jerry. Let's go next to the same area. Let's hear it from Ed in Santa Cruz. Hi, Ed.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Great. I read a great book, and it's called Blackmail My Love. And it's set in the 1950s, and it's a gay and lesbian community, and it's a lot of history. And but it's a novel, so it was really great.
Where is that set? Is that a Bay Area book? Is it set in San Francisco area or elsewhere?
It's in San Francisco.
Oh, good.
It's set in San Francisco, and the woman who wrote it is a printmaker.
Okay.
And her prints are in the book, so that's really different.
I love that. Yeah, art and literature meet. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Great. Thank you for calling in. We've got a lot of emails. Cormac says, I loved this book, The Thrill of It All, by Irish author Joseph O'Connor, brother of Sinead O'Connor.
Oh.
Are either of you familiar with that one?
No.
I've seen it. I've not read that.
Okay.
So good to know.
Thank you, Cormac. Stav says, not from this year, but I came across a gorgeous kids' book called The Dayglow Brothers about
yes.
Bob and Joe Schweitzer and their discovery invention of life-saving colors that suffused popular culture. It's by Chris Barton, illustrated by Tony Persiani.
It is amazing and incredible. So bright, it almost hurts your eyes because it is Dayglow colors.
And so it's the discovery of life-saving colors that suffuse popular. That sounds great.
Yes, yeah. It is wonderful.
All right. Thank you for that, Stav. Philip says, not a new work, but one essential to any serious reader who hasn't yet read it, The Secret Agent by Joseph Conrad. As timely today as it was when it was written, it ponders the poisonous world of international intrigue and the human frailties and flaws of human nature that can turn the best of intentions upside down. Available in any good used bookstore, too, it's a major classic.
It's so great when you realize that the classics aren't just some dusty old things on a shelf, you know, that they really can be very modern. I'm reading a Zola novel right now.
Wow.
And it's just it's fantastically modern and gritty and gripping and entertaining. You know, you think, oh, I've got to read this classic. But no, they can really be some fantastic things. So I just need to remember to draw from that deep, deep well.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you for that. And Sheila says, this year's top for me is All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, the author I was not aware of. After finishing this luminous work, which I often think back to, I checked out his previous works. His collection of short stories, The Shell Collector, is likewise highly recommended. She says, happy holidays. And happy holidays to you, Sheila. Thank you for calling in or emailing. You can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it is our year-end book show, and you can give us a call. We'd love to hear your recommendations at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Today, we're joined by Sharon Levin, founder of the Bay Area Children's Literature List. She's a children's specialist at Books, Inc. in Palo Alto. And Kevin Hunsinger is co-owner of Green Apple Books in the Richmond District of San Francisco. Green Apple Books on the Park just opened in the Inner Sunset on the bottom floor of Lividio. And let's hear next from Dennis in San Francisco. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I have a favorite book of the year. It's called Dogs Rule Nonchalantly by Mark Ulrichsen, and it's a coffee table book, and it's so much fun. It's for dog lovers, and I read it in about 30 minutes, but then I go back and I read it every day and look at the cool pictures.
Great. A lot of fun dog books this year.
I've been noticing that, like, because we get a lot of books from publishers, and we're just getting a bunch of dog books.
Like, have you seen Shake?
Yes.
Stop-motion photography of the dogs shaking and just the incredible jowls flying everywhere, ears flapping. I can go back to that one every day, too.
Well, are you seeing any other trends this year? Did anything pop out for you?
Well, you know, we're getting a lot of books that come off of websites. So, like, Le Chat Noir, the little existential French cat, cracks me up, even though I am a dog person. Mm-hmm. And they've made a book out of that website, or that YouTube, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, okay, so websites that are popular and then become books.
Right.
Yeah. My Drunk Kitchen has a cookbook out. I love it. You've never seen My Drunk Kitchen?
No.
Oh, owe yourself a favor. Yes. It's pretty fun.
So he cooks while he gets
she,
drunk.
Yes.
She, okay.
Yeah, and it doesn't really cook very well either. Yeah. mostly drinks, but yeah.
Do you have many cookbook recommendations? We just had Bryant Terry on, author of Afro Vegan.
Yeah,
really?
Wow.
Beautiful book
for the
great recipes.
Completely opposite side, the Cook's Meat book is amazing.
Okay.
You got a big winner of that. I think there's like a baker's dozen of high-end San Francisco-based cookbooks. Books, you know, of Flour and Water's got a great one. There's a laundry list almost. Pete Mulvihill at Green Apple Books contributes regular cookbook columns to the Table Hopper Guide. Mm-hmm. So he's got that up, and I think that they're archived on our website too. So he's a really wonderful, very knowledgeable reader of those, and I would back his list. So if you're interested, check that out.
Okay.
Books.com.
And before we go back to calls and emails, you have a few more books that you want to talk about. So, Sharon.
Okay, well, it used to be what you have after Harry Potter, and now it's what you have after Percy Jackson, whose authors, by the way, is Rick Riordan, so now you can all pronounce it correctly. So I used to call Percy Jackson Harry Potter in Greek mythology. It really is. That's not a slam, it just is. So these books, Lodi's Oh, good. Loki's Wolves and Odin's Ravens by K.L. Armstrong and M.A. Marr are Percy Jackson in Norse mythology. They're really, really good. Most kids don't know Norse mythology. And it's these kids in South Dakota who are running into the Norse Armageddon, and I can never remember what the name of that is. But they're really good. They're very funny. They are very similar to Percy Jackson. And again, that's not a slam. They're great, fun books.
Okay, great. And then
one more? Should I bring this one out? Yeah. Harriet the Spy, which many of us grew up on, yes, has an anniversary edition with essays in the back by other authors who were touched by this book. And so I love that because I was a kid reading this book, and then we have tributes by Judy Blume, who wrote Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Meg Cabot, who did The Princess Diaries. Lois Lowry, who did The Giver. Gregory Maguire, who did Wicked. So all these wonderful people who were influenced by Harriet the Spy as children and the original text and the original drawings.
Great. And there's illustrations in that one.
Yes.
Very nice. And then you have one on public libraries.
I do.
I love
not a children's book at all. Yeah. It's just a beautiful photographic essay of public libraries across the country. And I am such a library geek that I could do a little pilgrimage to each of these places.
A photo essay by Robert Dawson, forward by Bill Moyers, afterward by Ann Patchett. The public library. And what about you, Kevin? You have a few more you brought in.
Yeah, I've got a couple. And speaking of anniversaries, San Francisco is celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Pan Pacific Expo this year. And the book that I love from that is, it's called Panorama. And this is by Lee Bruno. It's an extraordinarily beautiful, comprehensive history of everything that went into the creation and the fair of the Pan Pacific Expo, how important it was for San Francisco, how large it was for San Francisco. It basically took up the entire of the Marina District. I think it was 3 miles, you know, total time. You couldn't see it at any, you know, any one day, any week, you know, see everything. So this book collects some of the most extraordinary photographs of that time. And I've seen a lot of this stuff. I really do like San Francisco history and San Francisco archives and photographs and things like that. Pretty much every single photo in here, and they're gorgeous, were new to my eyes. So if this is an interest of anyone out there, I really wholeheartedly recommend it. We have signed copies at the store, too, which is pretty nice. Always makes a great gift.
Looks beautiful.
And it really is. It's a stunner. But the one that I really, really wanted under my tree this year was the Blue Note Uncompromising Expression. This is a coffee table history of Blue Note record label. They're celebrating their 75th anniversary now, the jazz label. Should have been 78, maybe. They started in the 78s and all the way through, and they're still going strong today. Vinyl has really come back strong. I think last year I read that there was a 700% increase in vinyl sales from, you know, 2013 to 2014. So it really is, it's back again. And I can't think of any label that's been more important to the history of music than Blue Note. This focuses on 75 key albums of Blue Note. So there are quick little capsule reviews and behind-the-scenes stuff. But part of what made Blue Note so special were the photographs and the album covers and designs. So you'll get those photos and then also a lot of contact sheets from the photo sessions, which, again, I geek out pretty hard on. So this, you couldn't ask for any more if you're a jazz buff or a music fan of any kind.
Can you give us a couple bands that are featured in...
Oh, sure. Well, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, you know, they also go all the way up. Blue Note also did Nora Jones' first album, so runs the gamut. It is pretty pretty traditional jazz, although they were, you know, traditional. They're groundbreaking every step of the way, but the 50s and the 60s from bop, hard bop, post bop into the free jazz. So they did it all.
Great. Thank you. That looks like a nice one, too. We've got a recommendation from Robert. I love this picture book, The Book with No Pictures by B.J. Novak.
Kevin brought it. That. Great suggestion.
Yes. And then just check out... Actually, do you want to... talk about the book with no pictures?
No, not at all.
Okay.
We basically just did. It's a really pretty goofy thing. There are no pictures in a kid's book.
Oh, that's the one you talked about earlier.
Mayhaps. Yeah, that basically it gets you to talk as you're reading it aloud. In fact, maybe I'll have you do some on air. No, we don't have time. But talk like, oh, I'm a robot monkey now. And it's basically a break the fourth wall that really the kids love it because as the adult reader, the book makes you sound like a goofball. And so it's just a crack up laugh, right?
Okay. It says, check out the video of the author reading some of the book to a crowd of little kids. It's the funniest book they've ever heard rolling in the aisles.
For reals, yeah. It's
and plus, the author is B.J. Novak, so he's an actor, so he's very good at it.
I haven't seen the video, actually. I can't wait.
And thank you for that, Robert. Anne says, two great books for children ages 8 to adult, Flora and Ulysses.
Yes.
By Kate DiCamillo. Mm-hmm. And then for young adults, about 14 to adult, I'll Give You the Sun, Jandy Nelson. Mm-hmm. And that's the first book that Sharon brought in and talked about. So thank you. And we have time for one more caller. Let's go to Linda in San Francisco. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I wanted to tell people about this adorable little gift book I got in Green Apple. It's called I Could Pee on This and Other Poems by Cats.
Yes. I think I helped you at the register.
I bought six of them for gifts.
Yes.
The poems are divided into groups on family, work, play, and existence, and the pictures are precious as well. So I highly recommend it as a little gift book.
It would fit in any stocking. That's a great suggestion.
And for any cat lover or people who like, have friends who like cats or have cats, I think it's perfect.
Ah, perfect.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Linda. We had a caller who wanted to know how many books you read a year, and how do you find the time?
We ignore our families?
that wouldn't work with me. Lucky. You stay up very late nights, I guess. You know, I read, as soon as I get home from work, I flop on the couch, I put on a Blue Note record, and I read for at least an hour. It's just a way to decompress.
Every day.
Pretty much every day, yeah, for sure. And then at night, you know, if I can. I can't stay up as late as I used to, getting older. But, yeah, I would read, you know, I would hit the, you know, 10 till 2 in the morning or something sometimes. Yeah, a good book might keep me up all night.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, I read all as much as I can. We read hundreds of books a year. Yeah. If you include the picture books, then you're going to get to thousands. And you can't be in this business and not be a fast reader. And you also have to learn that if a book is not holding you by page 40, you have permission to put it down and go on to the next one.
Oh, yeah, my parachute's always close to
my hands. How often does that happen to you both?
Nah, 75% of the time for me.
Really?
I'm a tough reader. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't cotton.
So you give it about 40 pages?
Not even.
Okay.
I mean, if it doesn't ring my bell for some reason at some point, any point, I'll just put it down. Half a first page, you know, I don't.
You know, okay, I'm not tough. That tough.
I'm quick on the trigger for sure.
Well, thank you so much for all of the recommendations. And you can find the list at Your Call Radio. We'll have it up in well, maybe about a half hour. Thank you so much for joining us. Sharon Levin is founder of the Bay Area Children's Lit List, children's specialist at Books, Inc. Kevin Hunsinger is co-owner of Green Apple Books in San Francisco. Green Apple Books on the Park just opened in the Inner Sunset bottom floor of Lavideo. Thank you both for coming in and sharing all these great books.
Yeah, thank you, Rose. This is always fun. Sharon,
really
great to see you again.
You too, Kevin.
Thank you, and thank you for your recommendations. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What do you want to ask Harry Shearer? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Harry Shearer, actor and host of the radio show Le Show. Harry Shearer and his wife Judith Owen are in the Bay Area for their Tuesday night variety show, Christmas Without Tears. It's a benefit for the San Francisco Mental Health Association. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll